Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Song plays in honor of Matt Derrick's book that you can get at triumphbooks.com/chiefswin. I don't even have to look at it anymore.
I just got that.
Wow, Rudy just got it.
I just thought it was like at last, like Matt's finally on. Like at last. I didn't think about the book.
Marco, go it. Same boat for you. So Rudy and Marco just figured that out. I was gonna say that.
Learn
this
something
time,
new every day on the zone.
This
well,
time
first time, but
you learned something new today on The Zone.
Yeah.
I was going to say that what it means at last this time is that at last, you know, some fresh air in the studio. I'm Joshua Briscoe filling in for the day along with Rudy Salazar and Marco Marquez on the other side of the glass. And we still have the absolute joy of talking to Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest here with us right now. Matt, on a scale of 1 to 10, how disappointed are you that Rudy and Marco just got that? And then on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you that Rudy and Marco just got that?
Disappointment level's pretty low because I have low expectations at all times, which I
fair.
Find to be
smart.
Very conducive to life in general. And considering that that song, I mean, you know, Good God, was probably released 50 years before they were born, it doesn't surprise me at all. So pretty low. But I think it fits with everything else about me, which is it works on many different levels.
That's exactly
yeah,
right.
Because I really thought it was just like, hey, at last, Matt's here. We can talk some Chiefs. Thank God Almighty, at last. Been waiting all day for it.
Matt's also got a good taste in music, so I thought, all right, that's just a good one to start off the day.
I just think it's so weird that a joke told on The Zone didn't fully land.
Wow.
Whoa! What? Who said that? Who said that? Listen, they deal it, they could take it, you know? That's sort of where I'm coming from at this point. Matt! I don't know if you know this, by the way. This is some pretty big news. I might be able to break this to you. There's a Kansas City Chiefs regular season football game at the end of this week. Some would say at last.
I'd heard reports, but I hadn't seen confirmation yet. So I'm glad you've been able to confirm that, you know, 6 days from now, football.
Oh, I didn't even have it being specifically 6 days. That's even more. Okay, that's so as confirmed now by Matt Derrick, 6 days from now, football.
6 days and 4 hours.
In how many seconds? In how many minutes? Go ahead, Rudy. Give us
days,
a perpetual countdown.
4 hours, 3 minutes, and maybe, like, at this point, 30-ish seconds?
That seems probably pretty close.
I'm pretty close.
What, 22 minutes, right?
Well, I guess that's right. Is kickoff at 3:05?
I guess
for some
3:25.
Oh, it's 3:25. Okay.
Yeah,
well, then, yeah, Matt's right.
Yeah. Don't ever question Matt for any reason.
At last, he's here to tell me to help me out, you know?
Matt, I think that there are probably pretty clearly two big storylines headed into this week that are at least new to this week, with Tyrann Mathieu testing positive for COVID back on, I think that was Wednesday, and then shortly thereafter, Willie Gay Jr. placed on injured reserve. Those, you know, didn't happen over the weekend necessarily, but are still pretty fresh in my mind as two enormous questions the Chiefs have to answer right now. Which one of them is leaving you more concerned at this point?
I mean, I think you have to be concerned about just what kind of availability Tyrann Mathieu will have. I mean, maybe we'll get some insight from Andy Reid later today. We'll see, but that could be touch and go. I mean, it could certainly go either way. He's got to have those two negative tests 24 hours apart in order to be eligible. I mean, that's the nature of nature at this point. So that, I think, you have to be concerned. But you know you're going to play without Willie Gay. There's nothing you can do about it. The die is cast there. And, you know, the Chiefs do have some workarounds without Willie Gay, but Tyrann Mathieu's too big of a piece. I mean, you don't have him against one of the better teams on your schedule in the entire season, week one. That's a setback. So that would have me the most worried. if for no other reason, it's simply out of your control. You're just not going to know, you know, when you're going to have Tyrann Mathieu back.
The way the protocols are set up, because he's reportedly vaccinated, it's like 5 days away from the team, then two negative tests within 24 hours. So, I mean, the timeline, or 24 hours apart, I mean, the timeline is open. But to your point, it depends so much on if he has symptoms of any kind, how long it takes to test negative, just all of those moving parts. Let's say that he is either limited or fully not playing. If he is playing, then nothing really changes, I guess, if he's all good to go. If Tyrann Mathieu is limited, is not playing, how much does that change what you expect from the Chiefs' defense? Because unless I'm forgetting something, we have not seen a meaningful game that the Chiefs have had to play without Tyrann Mathieu since Spags got here.
Yeah, we haven't. And, you know, we've been talking about this. I mean, this is a position that doesn't have a huge amount of depth. I mean, the Chiefs are only bringing four safeties into the season as it is. And, you know, one of them has been the enigmatic Juan Thornhill that I can't decide if the Chiefs think is a current Pro Bowler or a special teams player. I mean, I say that tongue-in-cheek because clearly they really still like Juan Thornhill, but they're trying to challenge him in some way or get something out of him that I haven't figured out the mystery of it yet. But, you know, if you're down to, you know, they're having to rely on Thornhill and Sorensen and Armani Watts for a team that thrives on playing a lot of three safety looks. I mean, I got to have serious questions because we haven't seen them play a significant amount of time of any sort the last few years without Tyrann Mathieu. So I don't know how that would look, and I don't think they know how it looks. He's just too much of an important piece. And honestly, I mean, the one thing that trickles into the back of my mind is that if the Chiefs have to play a game without Tyrann Mathieu, it could significantly affect the contract negotiations.
Mm.
Because either it's going to go really, really well, which the Chiefs could say, you know what, yeah, we can hold firm on our deal, or it's going to go really, really badly, in which case I think the Chiefs would have to say, hey, Tyrann, yeah, name your price, we're done.
I hadn't really thought about that angle, and that it makes me even more nervous about it. What about with Willie Gay? I mean, we know that he's not going to be out there against the Browns, Ravens, or Chargers at least. I don't know if you've got a feel for because the IR with the designation to return can happen after three missed games, after 3 weeks. So I don't know if you have a feel for what that timeline will actually be. Again, we'll hear from Andy Reid in a little while. We'll bring you that audio later in the 12 o'clock hour as well. But both in terms of what his long-term expectations for this year now have evolved into and in terms of what it's going to look like against the Browns, how much does his absence impact it?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, obviously, hey, Willie Gay wasn't on the field when the Chiefs played the Browns last year. So, you know, I mean, it's, they were able to beat them last year without him. So there's that. Now, of course, you know, when the Chiefs, you know, played that game last year, good grief. I mean, you know, I think Damian Wilson had the most snaps of any linebacker on the team and Ben Neiman. So I'm trying to remember. I'm looking at the game book now because you made me think about it. Was Hitchens even in that game?
I couldn't tell you. I don't. I will tell you what I'm sort of concerned about, and we'll probably talk about this more at next segment as well as we wait for Andy Reid later. But like the thing that I'm also stalling for you to figure out if Anthony Hitchens played or how much he played.
He did. I just missed the snaps there. Yeah, he played 47 snaps. So yeah, no. I mean, clearly the Chiefs defense is better with Willie Gay on the field. But I don't think they're in bad of shape with Nick Bolton. I mean, I think that the only thing that is really the parallel problem is if you're playing without Willie Gay and Tyrann Mathieu, that becomes really complicated. Because now, you know, you've lost a little bit of the luxury to play Dan Sorensen in the box, which may make Chiefs fans want to scratch something and drive them crazy. But it doesn't bother apparently Steve Spagnuolo or anybody else on the defense.
Yeah.
But you would lose a little bit of that luxury without Tyrann Mathieu. And so that would mean you have to rely a lot more on Nick Bolton, Ben Neiman, which, you know, I don't think is necessarily a problem. I mean, I think that of those two injuries, Gay is the one that is the least problematic because I think the Chiefs can work around it, and I think they're better and deeper at the linebacker position than they have been for a while. But it would absolutely force them. If they don't have both those guys, I mean, they're going to have to pull some new tricks out. and do something different. But the loss of Gay, I'll be honest, I mean, it doesn't scare me that much because I've seen enough from Nick Bolton to think that they're going to be okay.
Here's my specific concern, and also the one concern that Bolton does not necessarily assuade me from, is that over these 3 weeks, the Chiefs are going to see a combo of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and I mentioned Hunt specifically for this particular skill set. Then the Ravens are a different breed in this regard, but they have Lamar Jackson, the most dangerous running threat from the quarterback position in football. And then they go up against the Chargers with Austin Eckler. And I don't trust Nick Bolton to cover cover running backs out of the backfield. And then if that shifts to a responsibility for someone else, I know Anthony Hitchens is trimmed down, but I don't necessarily trust him to completely, just blanket any running backs out of the backfield. I don't really trust Ben Neiman too, although I'm guessing that he will be the guy they try to do that with. But it does seem like the drafting of Willie Gay was in some ways to prevent them from having to put Ben Neiman in that situation more than they absolutely have to. You can't just have Dan Sorensen do it, especially if Tyrann Mathieu is not out there. So how much does that particular part of the game sort of catch your eye? Because it's something that I still have flashbacks from for some of the worst parts of the Chiefs defense, which has largely obviously been pretty good since Bags got here.
Yeah, I mean, I some of those things I don't know will change a whole lot. I mean, based especially on what we saw a lot during training camp, I mean, Dan Sorensen is going to be on the field a lot.
Sure.
And if Dan Sorensen is on the field, there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be either playing in the box, he's going to be covering tight ends, he's going to be covering running backs. So in that regard, I don't know if a whole lot is really going to change. Now, you're right. I mean, I think the one area of that Nick Bolton comes into this league needing to work on and get better with is going to be in coverage. I thought he did generally a pretty good job in Mizzou, but, you know, he's a downhill player. And mm-hmm. I think that's the one concern is that sometimes, you know, maybe some of the play actions could get the better of a rookie, and that's what he's going to have to watch for. And that's what could be particularly scary about a running back out of the backfield is that, you know, hey, if that's Bolton's responsibility, and he bites too hard, he could be out of position. But at the same time, I mean, you know, these teams are going to try to run the football too. And that's where I think that the Chiefs are going to be better than they were a year ago. Because I think with, you know, Jarran Reed coming in there and the other guys improving the development of Colin Saunders, you got to think that there's going to be a little bit fewer holes up the middle for guys to find. And then when it does come to the run game, I think that's where Nick Bolton's going to shine. Because this guy is, like I said, he's a really good downhill player. He's got great reaction from that standpoint in the run game. He's a pretty sure-handed tackler. I mean, we'll see if that translates to the NFL level. But he's got the skill set to be the kind of guy that can really be an effective weapon in the run game. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. But you're right. I mean, I think that if I'm the Browns, the one thing that I would be looking for early is, you know, how can I get some of these running backs out of the backfield and get the ball to them in space, because there could be some plays there.
Yeah, that I think very early on, as of Monday, I think that's the one little zone of the game that I've gotten more worried about in the last few days. But I do agree with you about the run defense being better for all the reasons you've laid out there. And the one guy that I just sort of crossed my mind as you were kind of going through several different parts of this defense that are going to have their various large impacts is we just haven't seen or heard word of Frank Clark for the entire preseason, for a good chunk of the training camp. The Chiefs didn't put him out there to talk whenever he was healthy because of all of his offseason stuff, I'm assuming. And then he has the hamstring issue and injured players don't talk. So we haven't heard from Frank Clark at any point in a press conference setup. I don't know if we will this week, maybe, maybe not. We also just haven't seen much from him, and I don't. If you saw like any big splash plays out of training camp from Clark, or maybe he did something in one-on-ones that you remember or whatever, I'm happy to hear about it. But it's just a weirdly quiet, for a whole bunch of reasons, a weirdly quiet last couple of months outside of the arrests that we learned about for Frank Clark. What's your expectation whenever we see him actually playing, assuming we do see him actually playing on Sunday?
I mean, I guess my expectation, once again, you know, I try to have low expectations, I suppose. So I'm not expecting Frank Clark to go out there and have three sacks or be a disruptive influence, because you're right. At this point, we haven't necessarily seen that. Now, of course, you haven't seen him in a game action, and his injuries, you know, kind of limited him a little bit, and even some of the one-on-one stuff that we would normally see. So we couldn't even, you know, be talking about how, oh, hey, yeah, there was this great play where Frank Clark just, you know, completely and totally lit up Orlando Brown or something. Mm-hmm. But he was, I thought he's been Frank Clark. I mean, he's been who he is. So I'm expecting him to go out there and play pretty steady, assuming that he's healthy and ready to go, which, you know, we don't have any evidence at this point that he's not, getting there. But, I mean, all the eyes are going to be on Chris Jones. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why I think, you know, hey, maybe Frank Clark is the sneaky guy in this game, that if there's a lot of attention that the Browns give to Chris Jones, trying to figure out what he's doing, keep an eye on him. Maybe that's going to free up Frank Clark to get in some situations where he's got some one-on-one matchups that he can win. But, you know, expectations, like I said, are pretty low. I mean, if I had to put his over-under numbers, I'd say, okay, well, 0.5 sacks would probably be my over-under. Couple, 2.5 tackles, maybe over-under. I mean, I'm not expecting him to go out there and be the defensive MVP or anything like that because, you know, one thing, that's not what he's going to be asked to do. So, but I think you have to have tempered expectations at the very least for Frank Clark until he shows you what he's got.
I heard this question. I'm stealing this straight from Surin. And so, you know, I'm always happy to just admit when I'm doing that. But he asked Adam Teicher who would be second on the Chiefs in sacks this year. What would your answer to that be, with Chris Jones being the presumptive number one?
Good question. I mean,
you should text Surin and just tell him good question. He'll be really confused because he's not on the air today.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'd still probably say Frank Clark. I mean, low expectations at all. I mean, I think he's going to get the most opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, assuming he's healthy, and we've seen, you know, he's a second half kind of player. I mean, he's certainly been that, and he's been, you know, productive, and, you know, not necessarily $26 million productive.
Yeah.
But he's been productive. So I would say, hands down, I would put my money on Frank Clark being number two.
I think I would also, because of the word opportunity, I think that makes the most sense of, like, barring injury or health, which he's had issues with, obviously, but, like, he's gonna be on the field a large number of reps. I think Teicher said Mike Dana, which is a kind of a fun sleeper pick, but I just think Frank Clark is probably going to get, you know, or Dana will probably get, like, I don't know, 60% of the snaps that Frank Clark does. And either way, it feels like we are either in or we're about to take the off ramp to get into damning with faint praise town on Frank Clark. And I mean, I don't know if there's anything. If you can't hear it in my voice, I am defeated. Like, I don't want to have this conversation about Frank Clark anymore because it just always gets deeply unpleasant. But it's just sort of. I think we've all gotten exhausted by it to the point that it's just sort of like, yeah, I don't know, man. He's probably going to have some sacks. I'm probably not going to lead the league in sacks, and we'll figure it out next offseason, which is fine. And so I'm going to go ahead and follow my instinct and talk about anything else. The one thing that's kind of interesting about the Browns is, you know, Baker Mayfield is in whatever that sort of that tier of quarterbacks who are definitely good NFL quarterbacks but are also not necessarily the guys that are going to drag an average team to a Super Bowl. And you also have legitimate weapons around him. We've talked about the running game a little bit with Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and passing to those guys even. But also, you have Odell Beckham Jr. back. You have Jarvis Landry back, which is going to be, I think, an interesting test for this secondary. You've got some inexperience. You know, L'Jarius Sneed feels like the most sure thing, and Ward's obviously started now for a while. But presumably it's Mike Hughes as the third corner. There should be some legitimate tests there from the Brown side of things. Obviously, Tyrann Mathieu moves the needle quite a bit. But how are you feeling about the test that these corners are going to face?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting test right out of the box. I mean, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I mean, this is still, to me, an interesting Browns team. Because mm-hmm. I'll be honest, you're putting Baker Mayfield in the category where I think he probably deserves to be as far as, you know, describing what kind of player that he is. But, you know, with the talent around him, I feel like that we should probably be seeing better play and seeing a more productive player. And it just hasn't been there yet. So I still think a lot of this, you know, how far the Browns are going to go is going to be as far as Baker Mayfield can take them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to be, you know, whether he is the kind of quarterback that's not going to be missing little tiny plays. He's going to be avoiding the big mistakes. I mean, you know, not necessarily saying that Baker Mayfield needs to go out there and be a game manager. And he didn't make a ton of mistakes last year. I mean, you know, he only had 8 interceptions. That's not a huge problem or anything. But, you know, to me, he's just got to be a more productive passer, especially with this talent around him. And we'll see. I mean, you know, hey, it could very well be that Odell Beckham Jr. is not the player that he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Jarvis Landry is not the player that he once was. So maybe we're going to be overestimating this talent a little bit. But it's a good test. I mean, because this is a team that obviously gave the Chiefs some fits in the postseason last year. They could have easily lost that game. So, and it wasn't entirely on the defense. But, you know, to me, yeah, it's a good test out of the box, especially for just what's going to happen, you know, down the road with a few of the other games that they've got coming up. But then at the same time, you know, I think, okay, this is Andy Reid, this is Steve Spagnuolo. Given this amount of time to prepare for Baker Mayfield, I don't know how much of it's really going to be much of a test.
Mm.
I mean, you know, the Chiefs just seem to come out of the box ready to go every single year, and just not sure the Browns are on that level yet.
The other side of the ball also, I think, ends up being I kind of like this matchup for the Chiefs because you're in that sweet spot of the talent should be a test, but you feel like the Chiefs should still, with all this time to prepare, still be perfectly fine. I kind of think it plays pretty well for the Chiefs because if you're starting the season against the Giants or Washington or something, the Bengals, who they play, you know, in Week 17, like if you start against a team that doesn't really have these kind of aspirations, it sort of feels like preseason game number 4, maybe a tiny bit. But if you're starting off against maybe the Ravens or the Bills, it's a little more stressful. I like this matchup for Week 1. But you know, talk about tests on the other side of the ball. Like, you get Jadeveon Clowney, who's the addition they make this offseason on the defensive line, to pair with Myles Garrett. And one of those guys is going to see a whole lot of Orlando Brown, and one of those guys is going to see a whole lot of Lucas Niang. Obviously, you've got the 3 rookies. That storyline will probably honestly get overplayed because Creed Humphrey does not look like a rookie. Trey Smith might have a rookie moment or two, but like, he is a mauler, and you're gonna see both Brown and Niang have to exist on an island a little bit against some legitimately elite pass rushers. Maybe the edges come off Clowney a little bit, but what do you expect from the Browns defensive line against the Chiefs O-line?
Yeah, to me, that is the absolute test. The one indicator from this game that's probably going to tell you more about the Chiefs season than anything else. Mm. Because this line has not been tested yet. I mean, even in the preseason games, there wasn't really any opportunity that the offensive line got to go up against a full-strength number one defensive line. I mean, a lot of times they were facing some number two groups and guys who were sitting out, and nothing is fearsome. What they're going to see from the Browns, because the Browns, they've got an interior rush too. They've got some guys on the inside who can play. They're deep, so it's not like, you know, if any of those guys have to come out for a period of time, that, you know, that they're bringing in hobos off the bench. I mean, they're going to be good. They're going to come after you. So to me, yeah, this is the test, and because it's not just even one spot. The Browns can come at you from every different direction. So if there is a weakness in this Chiefs offensive line, there's anybody on the schedule that's going to be able to expose it and tell you where that weakness is, it's the Browns. And so that's why I'm really curious to see how this line holds up. I could not even begin to give you any predictions about, you know, how this line will fare, you know, what kind of pressure or what kind of, you know, sacks I would expect them to give up against, you know, give up for Mahomes, because we just don't know. I mean, I am, like I said, I like to have low expectations so I can be pleasantly surprised. But I will say my expectations for this group are probably higher than they should be, which means that maybe I will be surprised at, you know, how productive the Browns can be against them. But yeah, this is it. I mean, this will tell you more than anything else in this game, you know, how the Chiefs are going to fare this year.
You really artfully told me not to ask you to predict anything, so I'll move on to something else. It was so graceful, but I did pick it up. So I won't say, you know, so how do you think that Lucas Niang will fare against Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney? Because we don't know.
I have no clue.
That's fine.
He look like an all-pro or a pro bowler?
Yeah, which of those two options, Matt, which do you think all...
What's more likely?
Do you think all 5 Chiefs offensive linemen are more likely to all make the Pro Bowl, or will they all also just be all pros? There's your prediction. Thank you,
yeah,
Rudy.
You know what? Probably somewhere in between.
Wow. So, like,
pretty
so
good.
They're all Pro Bowlers, but, like, three of them are all pros.
Yeah.
All right, I can live with that.
The three rookies, weirdly enough.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah. Yeah, Orlando Brown and Joe Tooney, actually not all pros, but they do get it. They're replacements in the Pro Bowl. They all get to play together. I wonder what the largest number of offensive linemen from one team to make the Pro Bowl would be. I don't expect anyone, even with the sound of my voice, to know that off the top of my head.
Four.
I feel like there's a chance that I might just get a text from Curtis in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But
with that information,
Curtis,
yeah.
If you're off today, Curtis, if you're listening, turn off the radio. Don't text me. You don't need to do this. But anyway, there's that. Matt, this may be our last thing. So I'm really interested to know where you think this lands. But what's the spot we haven't talked about that you think, you know what? Either the Browns are going to also give this position a real test, or the Chiefs are going to answer some questions for themselves here in terms of, you know, we'll finally stop playing a little rope-a-dope about position, whatever, about player, whatever. What do you expect that we might see on Sunday where you go, all right, there's the answer to the to another question that we've been asking for the last 6 months?
Well, maybe it's not a question that everybody's been asking, but I could probably go a couple of different directions on this. But, I mean, I guess the one question maybe everybody's asking that we'll probably find out is, and then maybe this folds in a little bit with the offensive line question, but it's just going to be, you know, can this team be more effective in short yardage and red zone situations?
Mm.
You know, this is a Browns team that, once again, we talked about, has a pretty good up front, you know, front seven. So I think that they can give you a little bit of a test as far as, you know, whether this is a team that on third and one, they can just go ahead and plow ahead and get the yards they need with a running back and not have to dig into their bag of tricks, you know, in the passing games and just get a yard when they need to every once in a while, or whether they can, you know, enforce their authority a little bit. But the other thing that this team's going to give a test to me, and I think will once again go a long way towards telling how productive this defense can be, is if they can be effective against the run. I mean, I know you hate talking about the run.
I hate it. My one final question after this is not going to even be about running backs because I hate them so much. Go ahead. Sorry.
But you know, the Chiefs can't be a team that's given up 160 yards on the ground. I mean, you just can't do that in this league. I mean, you know, you've got to be able to play some effective run defense when you need to. And I think this team can, because I think they're better at the point of the attack. I think that they're going to be a little bit better at the linebacker level. So I think they should be effective. But you know what? If Chubb and Hunt go out there and they put up 180 yards rushing on the Chiefs, then I have no reason to believe this isn't going to be another one of those years where if a team, you know, needs some yards on the ground and needs to want to keep the ball away from the Chiefs a little bit, try and keep a close game, I can't see how they're going to stop anybody. This is going to be a big one because they're not going to face a lot of teams that have as productive guys in the backfield as the Browns do.
Here's my actual last thing, and we'll get you out of here. This is a small question, but it's something that I spent more time thinking about as I was doing a trio of fantasy drafts last night. What is your theory? The Chiefs keeping only three running backs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams, and Jerick McKinnon. What's your theory as to what that split is going to be, including both of those backups and kind of who slots where? Because I think I've got a working theory that I want to run by you, depending on what your answer here is.
Yeah, that's another tough question. I mean, because I think there's reason to believe that Clyde's going to get more opportunities along the goal line, which could lead to just, you know, more touchdowns overall.
Mm-hmm.
I got to think that he's going to get 50 to 75% of the touches overall, assuming he's healthy all season. I mean, mm-hmm. That could obviously change, you know, get
sure.
Banged up or anything. And honestly, at this point, you know, you probably have to say that you're expecting 17 games out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire is probably a little bit too much. I mean, still early in his career, but we'll see. But Jerick McKinnon is going to surprise some people. I mean, he's going to probably get, in my ballpark, maybe 6 to 8 opportunities a game. Could be less, could be more some weeks, depending on the matchups. But he's going to get some opportunities, and maybe he's going to poach some touchdowns away. I mean, I don't think that Darrell Williams is the guy who's going to come in and poach any touchdowns away from Clyde. So from that standpoint, I mean, I think Clyde's going to have a better year this year as far as touchdowns go. And his yardage should be up, I mean, assuming once again that he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But McKinnon's probably the X factor because I I think he's going to get his opportunities, but it's going to be probably, from a fantasy standpoint, feast and famine. I mean, he might have some weeks where he puts up 80 yards and two touchdowns all purpose, and then maybe 3 yards and the cloud of dust. Some
right.
Weeks.
That somebody asked on Twitter for like who's the Chiefs' number two running back going to be? And the thing that I thought, I don't think I actually tweeted this because I was trying to stay off Twitter while I was off work, but was like Darrell Williams spent so much time on the field in third downs last year. Like it was very clear that he was the guy the Chiefs trusted more than Clyde in terms of protecting Patrick Mahomes in obvious passing situations. I think I could see Darrell Williams still doing that and still keeping that role in a pretty significant way, but I would rather have Jerick McKinnon in fantasy. Or if you have Clyde and you want to handcuff a running back in your fantasy draft, I would say that if Clyde went down, then McKinnon would be the guy that would benefit from that the most for a given week or two. But I don't want to say that Darrell Williams isn't going to get plenty of snaps, but I feel like McKinnon probably ends up with more productive touches if that makes sense. And if you buy that, I don't know, maybe McKinnon and maybe Clyde honestly end up earning more of those third down reps. But just so much, especially late in the season, I felt like I was looking for Clyde to come out in third downs and to be a part of the passing game if he wasn't staying in the block, and it just seemed like Darrell had almost all of that work.
Yeah, I mean. That's the one thing. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, to me, Darrell Williams is probably going to be a guy that gets the majority of the touches on third down. McKinnon could be in there too because he's not a bad third down back, and we saw it. I mean, you know, we saw it against the Cardinals against Zaven Collins. I mean, he can block some guys on occasion.
Yeah,
we've also seen him completely whiff on guys back in training camp. So it's a little bit inconsistent there, but. I mean, to me, I think Darrell Williams will probably get more reps than McKinnon will, but probably not as many productive touches, I think, by the way you put it. But then again, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes down, Darrell Williams is going to be the guy that gets most of that work. It's not going to be McKinnon that comes in and takes over that role. And the other intriguing factor is that I don't expect to see this, and you're going to hate hearing this too. And like I said, you're not going to see it often. But McKinnon's the guy who can come in there and be on the field at the same time as one of those two guys. You know, the Chiefs are not afraid to, you know, put two running backs on the field.
That's fine. No, that's perfectly okay with me. I don't like running the ball for running the ball's sake. That's what I hate. Well, I am perfectly happy to get some weird matchups with a guy. If you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Jerick McKinnon, you put both of them, or even, God bless Michael Burton, put those dudes on the field and get some weird matchups and punish defenses for just merely being terrified of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and then run the ball in some light boxes or against some lighter personnel. That's okay with me. Just don't run the ball in first and 10 all that often. That's all I ask.
I think if you sat down with Andy Reid for about 15 minutes, he could convince you to run the ball on first down at least 40% of the time.
40% is a lot. I also, you said 10 minutes. Here's my counterpoint. I don't think Andy Reid would spend 10 minutes with me. So I feel like I'll never have to know.
I don't think he'd need that amount of time because he might just even after 3 minutes just say, Josh, run the football and walk out on you. So.
If I got 10 minutes, I would just agree with whatever he said and then see if I could get like a burger tip or some sort of various food tip or, I don't know, mustache tips, something out of football.
I was going to say you would talk for 3 minutes and the final seven would be grilling or shirt related.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Matt, if you could see the shirt I'm wearing today, I feel like Andy Reid would be proud of that even if he's not proud of my opinions on offense.
I think that, you know, knowing you and having seen, you know, good chunks of your wardrobe, I think there is clearly 50% of the items in your closet that Andy Reid would wear,
yes,
and 50% he would probably burn.
Yeah. I think that checks out, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I think that plays. Hold on really quick. I want to see what percentage of the time the Chiefs ran the ball on first down last year. TeamRankings.com has NFL team rushing first down percentage. Where were they? The Chiefs were 25th in football 27.97% of the time. That's sub 30. I feel like this is a victory.
It's pretty low, yeah. I hadn't thought about it. I probably knew that at one point and just blocked it out. But I still think Andy Reid could convince you to run it 40%.
Oh, I mean, I think if Andy Reid wanted to, he could convince me to run the ball 100% of the time. Like, I feel like I have opinions on football things, and many of them I feel like are well-founded in research and actual knowledge. And I also think that Andy Reid could probably talk me out of almost any of them as quickly as he wanted to, because he's Andy Reid.
Yeah, and I will say this. This is the one, I think, huge misnomer that people have concluded about this Chiefs team, and maybe it's a little just with the broader national perspective because they've taken up on some maybe statements that were not eloquently phrased. The Chiefs are not this year looking to run the ball more.
Yeah.
They just want to be better when they run the football.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They just want to be more efficient. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they ran the ball less than they did a year ago. They just want to run it better when they have to.
100%. And you build an offensive line also that is there to protect Patrick Mahomes that also you can have to be a unit that makes you better at running the football. They should. I'm glad that that is the thing that they did. I'm excited about that. So, you know, I feel like we had some hostile moments here, Matt, as we so frequently do, because you and I just spend such a large amount of our lives really furious and furiously angry at one another. But I feel like we ended it.
No, you can't get away with saying it because people will think that I'm furiously angry with you all the time. I have never been furiously angry with you.
It's just, Matt, I wish you would stop raising your voice. I wish you'd stop raising your voice at me like this on the radio. It really makes me uncomfortable. And people listening right now are on this glorious radio station are just hearing your unfiltered rage.
I only raise my voice with you in GIF form.
That is fair. That's absolutely fair. Thank you, Matt. I look forward to hearing whatever excellent question you ask Andy Reid about how often they'll run the ball in first down this year in the pressers. I would be tickled if you're looking for a question for Andy Reid's presser today. If not, we'll just chat again soon.
I have a story angle now, so thank you very much.
You're so welcome. It's Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest, who has never been furiously angry with me ever. He hung up, so he didn't have to hear me admit that. But I don't think I've ever seen or heard Matt be fear. Matt is one of those people that I think if you did see him furious, would like change your whole worldview.
I think it'd be terrifying.
Yeah.
Because
that's the thing. The people who are angry all the time, like you eventually figure out, like that's just how they are.
Just,
you know?
That's just them.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Like Marco. Well, it's like
super angry guy.
Just an angry hothead.
We get it.
You get it. You
doesn't
know?
Bother us.
But whenever the person who's just like kind all the time, Marco just threw a piece of paper and it bounced off the glass back at him because. That's how glass works.
Yeah.
The people who are never angry.
That's where the rage comes from, his rage of glass. So I throw stuff at
him. He just tore a piece of paper in half, but it did take him 2 tries. So that's good work.
Isn't that great at being angry?
I think
he's angry.
His tear there was also code for break, which is a thing that we should probably do. I'm Josh Briscoe with Rudy Salazar and Marco Marquez. We're filling in for The Zone here on Sports Radio 810. The one thing that continues to be a curveball for me, filling in on this show, is that you're going to be able to hear the Cliff Bar bits in my mouth for the next, like, 30 seconds. Thanks again to Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. Chiefs Digest. Woof. Cliff Bar. I'm struggling to Chiefs Digest this Cliff Bar right now. ChiefsDigest.com on Twitter, at Matt Derrick. Dude is the best. Go! Make sure you're supporting his work. Also, the book, At Last, is beautiful and deserves a place on the shelf of any Chiefs fan ever. We will pivot from football to baseball and back to football in a little bit, and maybe there'll be other football and, I don't know, with other sports happening. I think there was a golf tournament. That concludes our golf coverage.
There was a golf tournament. I know something happened. I believe it involved John Rahm, but I'm not 100% certain of that.
Someone won $15 million. Whoever won the tournament.
Yeah, I think there was like
golf money is nonsense.
I think it was a playoff. Like I think it came down to like two guys. Winner takes a ton of money. Loser takes a lot of money, just not quite as much money, but still a ton of money.
This is a future AES imaging idea that I'll just float out here to you guys. I think imaging that just goes in a real golf voice, some birds in the background, some very soft music. It's just almost entirely sports. Half-assedly sort of tries to talk about golf. And then it's just that music for a while, and then we stop after 30 seconds and move on to something that we find more interesting.
And that was golf talk.
And that's been golf talk. Here on Sports Radio 810.
Second place won $5 million. Just $5 million.
Marco, if you could keep your voice down, we're talking golf right now.
My shirt just almost broke.
I heard that. It seemed unpleasant.
It's real fast. It's kind of like the thing that was
Please talk so I can try to get this Cliff Bar out of my teeth.
If you won the lottery, you got $500 million, but you won it with somebody else, so you had to split and you only got $250 million. It's like, yeah, you're happy, but you're also like, you're not completely happy. Because even though you got a lot of money, you're still a little bit like, because it's just how the human. It's still
I
like
think
the,
you got to cut that down to a smaller
like
number.
Probably, but still like the human brain works, right? Where you're just like, yeah, like I got $5 million, but could have 15.
I think anything that
it's just how our brains work, man.
I mean there's something we're there's something fair there. That's
people.
True. There is no such thing as enough money.
It's never.
Just ask Jeff Bezos, who is literally lighting it on fire as rocket fuel.
Yeah.
Like he has made enough money to light money on fire as rocket fuel.
Yep.
And Amazon's not going to get any smaller. You know, it's not. He's not at some point going to say, "I would like to make less Amazon money."
They're going to just keep growing.
Also, it's just a really efficient product.
With their robots.
Oh my God! How long is this? How long do we have here, Mark, on this segment? We got 9 minutes here, Rudy. That Royals audio is like 3 or 4, right?
Yeah, 3.5.
Okay, Rudy's going to throw some Royals audio from Mike Matheny in a second. The Royals play a game in like 10 minutes. But Amazon came up, and I'm going to do a shot clock review of this on AES probably this week. But our fridge / freezer at home does not have an ice maker, and we couldn't like use the ice maker anyway because of where it is. And the landlord's like, "Hey, don't use it. The water overheated. Whatever." I hate ice cube trays generally. I don't like them. We have some here at the station, which also what I'm about to say is probably going to change the lives of everyone here at the station. If someone wants to pony up on this, I just bought one, so I'm not going to buy a second one. Maybe I'll buy one for Jed, like for his birthday or something, because Jed is the ice. Jed is the what's the it's like the snow miser, you know, from
he's the
ice king.
Yeah.
What is the Game of Thrones ice king guy? He's always like a White Walker just for ice. So I might maybe this is just something we just buy Jed a present for his birthday or something, so he doesn't have to make
Night
all the ice here
king.
Anymore. The night, he's but he's
Night
really
king.
The ice king.
Yeah.
So. I bought a portable countertop ice maker that got in yesterday from Amazon. So I was like, "Here, Jeff, light this money on fire." It's so good. It makes nine little cubes every it makes 6 cubes every 9 minutes or something, and then it kicks them into the little tub. And it's not a freezer also because it would freeze the water in it. So then you take out the ice cubes. And you put them in your little container in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And over the course of while I was doing my 3 fantasy football drafts yesterday, I just every once in a while would take a trip over after a few loads of it had gone through, and I would just dump it into the actual ice container tray in the freezer. And our freezer now has a full thing of ice in it for the first time ever. And I put ice in my G Fuel cup this morning. I put ice in several drinks last night. I drank like 3 full glasses of various sodas, which I don't think I have done in a couple years at least.
All because of the ice.
Just because I was so excited to pour it over ice. Then the ice melts a little bit, and it's pretty crunchable ice from this little machine. Oh!
Just think there are people out there who don't put ice in their drinks.
Perverts, all of them. I knew that I missed having ice in my life, just at a place where I could just always have it. But then having it back, I realized it even more aggressively. And I'm so excited to have this ice maker in my life. Mm. And also, it's the oldest I've ever felt to be as excited about this ice machine as I actually am. Pivot now to Rudy, our Kansas City Royals correspondent. They play a baseball game in 10 minutes. Mike Matheny had his pregame press conference. And you thought he said something interesting.
Yeah, so a friend of the show, Alec Lewis, not necessarily this show, but, you know, for
no,
our
he's,
show.
No, privately he's told me he hates this show.
Yeah. Which show this show means.
He hasn't told me that.
If that's a yes or the zone, who knows?
We'll leave he that hasn't. Up to I made another joke about at the zone's expense, and I'm sorry.
But anyways, he asked Mike Matheny.
My apologies to the Anderson brothers.
Brady Singer obviously had an amazing performance last night.
They're not brothers.
But ultimately only threw 2 changeups. And essentially the question was, and there's a follow-up, also talking about Kowar. Mike Matheny kind of reiterates this with Kowar as well. But essentially the question of, it's understandable why a guy would only stick to 2 pitches when those 2 pitches are truly elite, when they're truly on. but also knowing that you going in the long run, you need that third pitch and the psychology behind that, and how you adjust for short-term success and long-term success and developing that third pitch.
Yeah, and so I think you have to look at frequency and how often are you going to have that kind of location. Are you going to be able to depend on that 80% of the time, or are you going to be, is it going to be flipped? And 20% of the time you have that fastball location and the right field for the slider. And I think it's been at this point closer to that 20. So you got 80% of the time, you're going to have to try and figure out how to navigate through a lineup three times, and doing that with a fastball that you're not locating well. And then maybe they're sitting on that slider, but that's the importance of having the third pitch and something that can help get you in back into counts. I believe over time, Brady's going to become more efficient. He's going to be more consistent with the fastball location and understanding the movement. But that's really the blessing and the curse that he has, is the ball moves so much, and it changes with weather. It changes with how he physically feels that day. It changes, seems like, by the time even he goes from the bullpen to the mound, the game mound. So it's a lot to make adjustments with during a major league game. And then he finds himself in a bind and just wants to go to his strength. But we are going to keep pushing that changeup and any other potential pitch that could help him control counts better. Because when he does that, and he has, you know, on those days where he's got it working, there really isn't much of a reason. But he's going to continue to need to have something else to keep the hitters distracted.
Okay, Mike, since Alec talked about practically every starter except Jackson Kowar, I'll ask about Jackson tomorrow. He had a really good good start on his re-debut, if we can call it that. What are you expecting from him? What does he have to do to repeat that tomorrow?
A lot like what we were just talking about with Brady, but like I'm talking about with all of them. He has a plus fastball. Think he was trusting it and the first go around. I think he was probably, like most, sometimes gives the league too much credit, and then running to the one pitch that he felt could be his parachute and lifesaver with his changeup, and never really establishing the fastball. So his fastball is good. And last game, I thought there was just a radical transformation. I think part of it is he's getting better every time that we give him an assignment. He seems to take it to heart. Development guys have done a nice job of helping him take that next step. I'd say the last piece is he's watching all his buddies have some success. And at some point, that pushes you to the point, you know what, I can do this too. And I saw that confidence. I saw Jackson get into counts where he needed to challenge a major league hitter, and he came right at him. And instead of toying around the strike zone. And I saw the slider get used. Salvi did a great job of making him use the slider, which, going right back to the previous conversation about Brady, that third pitch is going to be extremely important for all these guys. And we're watching that with Chris Bubich establishing that curveball this year, with Jackson Kowar now feeling for his slider. These guys are moving forward. And that's been one of the greatest rewards we've seen from this season, giving these guys opportunity. Yeah, a couple of stumbles and a little bit of things that were considered setbacks, but it actually has propelled them forward in their development.
I thought Mike Matheny had like a handful of interesting actually things in there. I think especially towards Brady Singer, the, you know, that 20-80% thing. And like, he's right. If your two pitches are truly connecting, then you can stick with those. Yeah. But only Jacob DeGrom is really throwing two pitches at an elite level 80% of the time, right? Like there are not a lot. I think he's right. Like, most of the time, he's only going to have that type of command, that type of stuff, about 20% of his starts. Because really the only guy who's doing it about 80% of the time is Jacob DeGrom. And obviously, like, you know, we see he's hurt right now, but that's baseball for pitchers. Like, when he's on, if he wants to just roll with those two, roll with it. But like, you need to see that continued development of and I think with all those guys, which also makes, you know, Carlos Hernandez a bit fascinating, because really he's got four.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one guy that group who we're not talking about developing that third pitch, because he's got a third pitch and he's got a fourth pitch, and he throws all four of them. Like, it's not like he's that fourth pitch or third pitch are just kind of being scattered here and there.
Right.
He's got four pitchers that he is using at a pretty high, you know, usage level.
He rolls a toolbox to the mound and sits it next to him, and he can pick as he goes.
And, and you know, he's throwing like 96 to 99, right? So it's not like he has like four, you know, sometimes like with guys like, you know, who have multiple pitchers, like a Chris Bubich type, who throw a little softer. No, Hernandez is out here. He's got, but he's also got the four pitches, which, you know, makes him, it's kind of, you know, he got overlooked because he's not part of the draft class, but he's, 100%. You know, he's those age of all those guys, and he might be end up being the most fascinating, you know, the best out of that group.
Yeah, last time we talked to Lesky and also Max Reaper about the guys who had made major league debuts for the Royals in terms of like their most optimistic long-term projections for the starters. It was Lynch one, who just, you know, had the worst start he's had in his return. I'm not panicking.
And
Hernandez too.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing with Singer that's kind of interesting, this is something that came up that stuck with me whenever I talked to Scott Barlow for a little bit a few weekends back. Mm-hmm. He said you don't really know if you've got your A stuff until you are not throwing the bullpen, throwing on the mound. And so whenever you end up at a point like that, I understand when Matheny says Singer sometimes doesn't know until it impacts the weather, how he's feeling from the bullpen to the mound. But you would like to be in a place where you know consistently if that's going to be a part of it. And if your if your other two pitches are just blowing dudes away like it was for Singer, then that's fine.
Don't change what's, you know, don't fix what's not broken.
Right. It's just not going to be that perfect
every time. Yeah,
even most of the times. The 80-20 thing's kind of interesting. The DeGrom point is good.
Like you said, like, you know, it's going to be 20% of the time he has that stuff, and then 80% of the time he's got to figure out a way to get through six innings. Now, that doesn't mean 80% of the time his stuff is bad. It's just 80% of the time it's not truly elite. And so there is like that figuring out, like, hey, how do I, you know, and that's where the third pitch comes in, because that third pitch just showing something different just gets a hitter a little bit off balance, which now makes your fastball, which maybe is an above average pitch that day, but not an elite pitch, it bumps it up a tier.
Absolutely. That sort of, what's the word for the relationship that benefits both parties? I've completely mind blanked. It's like a clownfish and a sea anemone. I think about finding
exactly
every time. Like a mutually beneficial
compromise? Like,
No.
It's like the little fishies that are on the bottom of whales and stuff, too, and they eat parasites.
I have 30 seconds to get this word. Biology between two
barnacle
symbiotic.
I didn't even see it on Google.
I haven't even found it yet. A symbiotic relationship.
Symbiotic. Yeah.
There is sort of, and I'm not even sure if that was the right word to choose for this.
No, I think it is.
But there is that symbiotic relationship between pitches that, as you have more things to make the hitter think about, you have more ways that you can wipe them out with your standard stuff. We'll take a break. Whenever we come back, we'll get closer to hearing from Andy Reid. We'll talk Chiefs next here in the Zone.